Last week, in part one, we explained the Ramban's view of the Pasuk HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem. Why did I say the Ramban's view? Because the majority of the Rishonim learned that Pasuk the way most of us are familiar with that Pasuk. So the Pasuk says, HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem Rosh Chodoshim Rishon Hu Lochem L'Chodshei HaShonah. First mitzvah given to Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim. First mitzvah given collectively to the Jewish people. Rashi says that this should be really the first mitzvah of the Torah. What is this mitzvah? So, most Rishonim only explain the mitzvah as we understand it traditionally, which has to do with setting up the Jewish calendar. The laws of Rosh Chodesh, the laws of declaring a Rosh Chodesh, setting up the calendar in terms of the Mo'adim, setting up the calendar in terms of the year, intercalation of the years, leap years, and the like, and basically the obligation on Beis Din to declare Rosh Chodesh in its proper time. That's the way it's understood, and that's the way the Rambam brings down the mitzvah, both in Sefer HaMitzvahs as well as in Yad HaChazaka, and that seems to be the common understanding of this mitzvah. Rashi here, and the Ramban elaborates and says, "Ein mikri yotzei midei pshuto," that the pasuk has to be understood in its literal sense, which is the following: that when we count months, we should count months from Nisan as being month number one, and all subsequent months to follow. And therefore, the order, the sequential counting of the months, should be in the order of where Nisan is one, Iyar is two, Sivan is three, etc. And that's the mitzvah. Now, the fact that most Rishonim don't seem to bring it down would indicate that they don't seem to have this understanding of it. But Rashi says, "Ein mikri yotzei midei pshutoi," and the Ramban elaborates, explains the Ramban, what is this mitzvah? The mitzvah is that we should count months from Nisan as a form of zecher liyitzias Mitzrayim. Since Yitzias Mitzrayim is a very important event, and we have so many mitzvahs that are all there as a zecher liyitzias Mitzrayim, this is one of them. In fact, according to the Ramban, the fact that that we have this mitzvah, very similar to the mitzvah of the way we count days of the week, is an indication that we do it for Zecher Yitzias Mitzrayim. Just like we count the days of the week, Hayom Yom Rishon L'Shabbos, Shein L'Shabbos, Shlishi L'Shabbos, and that's a way of giving prominence and importance to Shabbos, and constantly fulfilling the mitzvah of Zohar as Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. There's a mitzvah to always remember Shabbos, and that's mitzvah not only on Shabbos. The mitzvah of Zohar as Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho is a daily mitzvah. In fact, in most Siddurim, it's printed as one of the Sheish Zechiros, one of the six remembrances that a person is supposed to do every single day. Six remembrances. One of them is Mitzrayim, actually. The other is Shabbos, and then there are four other ones as well. So the way we fulfill the mitzvah of Zohar as Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho is by referring to the days of the week, as Rishon L'Shabbos, Sheni L'Shabbos, Shlishi L'Shabbos. Says the Ramban, is the same idea with the months. By remembering the months in the number and sequence, it's a way of fulfilling that mitzvah as well, of Zecher L'Yitzias Mitzrayim. Therefore, says the Ramban, the Torah only refers to months by number, not by name. What about the names of the months? And that's really the topic that we're dealing with. The topic that we're dealing with is where the names of the months came about, and why did it come about, and how do we justify that change? So the Ramban says the names of the months are not Jewish names. They're Goyishe names. They're Babylonian Persian names. They came from Bavel. They came from Ashur. And when the Jews came back at the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, they made these changes. And therefore, says the Ramban, you only find names of months mentioned in the Nevi'im Achronim, in the latter Nevi'im from the times of Bai Sheni. They refer to the months by their Babylonian Persian names. The Sefer HaIkrim, we briefly mentioned last week, takes this Ramban and says, based on this, that mitzvahs in the Torah are not necessarily eternal. Big chiddush. But that's the way the Sefer HaIkrim learns. The Sefer HaIkrim says, we find that Chazal tell us there were two very important changes that occurred in the beginning of the Second Temple period. One change was what we just mentioned, that months were named by their Goyishe names. And the second change was the script. The fact that the Torah is written in Ksav Ashuri rather than Ksav Ivri was a change. And therefore, says the Sefer Ikrim, that proves that mitzvahs are not necessarily eternal, and that we don't have to believe, as the Rambam says in his Yud Gimel Ikrim, that mitzvahs are immutable and unchangeable. They could be changed. Big chiddush of the Sefer Achinuch, of the Sefer Ikrim, I'm sorry. And most people argue on that. And we explained one of the reasons why what the Sefer Ikrim says is not necessarily the case, is because of the fact that we don't find that they completely nullified and abolished the count. They merely added a second track to the months. Now, why do they do that? The reason why they did that is because there is a pasuk in Yirmiyah, as the Ramban brings down. The pasuk in Yirmiyah says, "V'lo ye'omer oid chay Hashem asher helas bnei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim, ki im chay Hashem asher hela v'asher hevi es bnei Yisrael me'eretz Tzofon." No longer will we talk of the Exodus from Egypt, that Hashem took us out of Egypt, but rather instead, the focus will be on the fact that Hashem redeemed us and brought us out of the exile of Babylon. So they saw this as an indication that we have to make a commemoration. And the commemoration is a kind of a replacement of sorts. Rather than have a mitzvah that commemorates Mitzrayim, we're going to have that mitzvah as a commemoration of the Exodus, or the return from Babylon. So what do? They retain the Babylonian Persian names, and just like till now, by counting the months, countdown from Nisan, Iyar, Sivan as 1, 2, and 3, that was a way of recalling and reminding ourselves of the Yitzias Mitzrayim. So too, by referring to the months by its Babylonian Persian names, that's a way of saying, hey, how can we have Babylonian Persian Goyishe names? Teretz is, oh, because we used to be in Babel, we used to be in Persia, we're redeemed from there. So therefore, each time we refer to the Jewish months, or the months, by these Persian Babylonian names, that's a way of reminding ourselves of the fact that we were redeemed and returned from Bavel. Now, is that a replacement of the Torah's mitzvah? So the Sefer Ikrim suggests that it is. That by doing that, they nullify the count. However, most of the Farshim would say that that is not Pshat, but rather the Pshat in the Ramban is merely that there are two tracks. Till now there was one track of months, which is to count down the numbers. Now they layered over it a new layer, and that layer is give names as well. So there's names and there's numbers. By retaining the numbers, we are retaining the mitzvah of the Torah. By having an additional way of identifying the months with these names, that's a way of fulfilling the mitzvah midivrei neviim. We fulfill the mitzvah midivrei neviim by referring to the months by name as well. But it doesn't mean that we've replaced the mitzvah of the Torah, we haven't co-opted it or usurped it, we've merely added a new layer, we've merely added a second track, so there are two tracks. But that's not the way the Sefer Ikrim learns. The Sefer Ikrim seems to learn that one track replaced the other and you don't have the mitzvah. Perhaps the logic of the Sefer Ikrim was that once you start referring to the months by name rather than by number, you're automatically defeating the purpose of constantly reminding yourself of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Because only if you retain the purity of the Torah's approach, which is refer to them by number, just like days of the week. We say Yom Rishon Shabbos, Yom Sheni the Shabbos. That constantly reminds us of Shabbos. So unless you keep referring to the names of the months by 1, 2, and 3 number sequence rather than names, that's the way you fulfill the mitzvah of the Torah. But the moment that you add a second track and you refer to it by name, you've defeated the purpose of the numbers. Now, if you learn that the Torah says HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem Rosh Chodoshim as a way merely of giving prominence to the month of Nisan, let's go without the Ramban for a moment. Ramban says that the mitzvah is Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. One could learn along the lines of the Ramban, but slightly differently. In other words, one could learn that the Torah does want us to consider Nisan number 1, but it's rather than looking for reasons for that by saying, well, it's a constant reminder of Yetzias Mitzrayim, we could just say that the Torah considered Nisan a very choshev month. Obviously, because that's the month of our redemption, that's the month of our independence, it's the month where we had the supernatural miracles of Mitzrayim, but Nisan is a very important month. In fact, according to Rabbi Yeshua, that's the time of creation. As a result, the Torah says, this is month number one. So if it's merely to give it prominence, rather than a constant Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim, having two tracks doesn't violate that. In other words, you can have the sequence 1, 2, and 3 and consider Nisan the most prominent of months, but the fact that you refer to it by Nisan Iyar Sivan doesn't violate making Nisan the most prominent of months. If the mitzvah of HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem, Rosh Chodesh Mishnu Lochem, Lochot Shei Hashana, is merely a way of giving Nisan its prominence, then referring to the months by name does not violate that. But so therefore, if we learn not with the full, you know, thing that the Ramban says, but merely the Torah wanted to give Nisan prominence, so there would be certainly no violation by giving it names. However, the Sefer Ikrim understands from the Ramban that the Ramban is saying, no, this is another mitzvah Zecher Yetziat Mitzrayim. So the moment that we switch to a second track, we've defeated the first track by taking away from the constant reminder of Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. Therefore, the Ikrim proves from this that mitzvahs don't necessarily have to be eternal. They could be replaced under certain conditions. Obviously, that opens up a whole new Pandora's box about this idea of can Nevi'im override what it says in the Torah. One of the principles that we have is that Ein Novi Rishoyel Chadesh Davar, and of course the immutability of the Torah. But again, that's the controversy that the Sefer Ikrim opens. Yes? I do have to emphasize that the Sefer Ikrim is very, very radical and is not really in the mainstream and not really accepted by the majority of people, especially in this regard. And as we point out, there are many ways of answering up his points. But I merely just want to explain his rationale a little bit briefly. Okay, if you look on the page in front of you, we're going to go through now inside the Emes Liakov, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky's perspective on this. And this is a very fascinating insight. It's going to be a little bit more historical, but a perspective on history. So it's going to be, as I said, the shiur is going to be a little bit different than what we're used to giving. Says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, V'hine yesh l'tmoya, the question that we've asked, Madua be'emes ozvu loshen atoyer v'noktu loshen poras. He asks this question, how could we forsake the Torah's approach to sequential numbers and start using Goyish Persian names? I pointed out the irony of this last week, that, you know, most of us, when we hear our kids say, you do chinuch, and the kids say January, February, March, oh no, don't tell me the Goyish months. I want to hear you know the Jewish months. And they go instead, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, go, ah, gewaltig, you know Jewish time, you know Jewish months. Not only is that wrong, but it's really a disservice. It's wrong because those are not Jewish names. They're Goyish names, Persian and Babylonian. Secondly, you're defeating the purpose. The purpose was to know that they're Persian, Babylonian names. And the fact that we're using those is as a zecher of the Geula from Bavel. But if you're going to start thinking that it's ancient, originally Jewish names and Jewish time, then you've missed the whole point of that. The point is to be aware that they're Babylonian Persian names, and the point is to be aware that we adopted that, and we adopted those names, and the reason for that is as a zecher of the Geula from Bavel. But, you know, otherwise, you're missing the boat. And that's what I'm saying, it's a chiddush because most people are not aware of this. Of course, again, I still consider it a Jewish time. I mean, when we talk about Nisan the Yersi, when that's the Jewish way of counting things. But just to be aware of the background to it and the history of it, because that really is the point of that of that so-called Jewish months and Jewish time. So the reason to remember that was to remember the quote-unquote redemption from Babylon, the Geula of Bavel. Comes Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky and he says like this. So why do they change to Persian names? Ubefrat b'shemus hachadoshim sheish b'shemus avaydazar. Kagayin Tammuz. I pointed that out last week. That the month of Tammuz is the Babylonian name for a god similar to the Greek god Adonis. As the Greeks called it Adonis, the Babylonians called it Tammuz. So we have a month that's named after an idol. I also mentioned to you last week that the nuclear reactor that Saddam Hussein was building in 1981 that the Israelis bombed was actually called Tammuz 17. And, yeah. Now, the question was, is it because the same way that Shemos B'Tammuz was the beginning of the destruction of Yerushalayim by Melech Bavel Nebuchadnezzar, he fancied himself as modern Nebuchadnezzar, and the siege of Yerushalayim began in Shivasa B'Tammuz. So he called it Shivasa B'Tammuz, like this is going to be the siege of Yerushalayim and he's Nebuchadnezzar. It's possible, but I think the real reason is that the number 17 was coincidental for whatever reason, and he called it Tammuz because that was a common name that was used in Babylon, in Persia, Iraq. But if you look it up, Google it, but you'll see that he actually called it Tammuz 17.
You give him too much credit.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. If it was the Tammuz, not giving too much credit. But it was because Tammuz was, it's just a fascinating thing.
It is.
Yeah, I noticed this in 1981 when I first came across that. I thought of this Rambam then.
It's very interesting.
Yeah. So you could check it out though. In any case, how does that become Jewish? Ube'emes motzinu shebimei ba'isheni hoiso hasfas hamuduberes b'Yisrael loshen arami. We know the Jews in ba'isheni spoke Aramaic. V'rak divrei Torah kosu b'loshen HaKodesh. They merely used, when they wrote Torah, they used Loshen HaKodesh for Torah, but other than that, their vernacular was Aramaic. V'aloi b'mitzrayim hoyu mishapchim oisom shlo shinu es l'shoinam. Now, again, this goes back to a topic that we talked about another time, a number of weeks back, a couple of months ago actually, we talked about the idea of Jewish language and Loshinu Shmam as Lashonam, that here the Jews were praised in Mitzrayim for not changing their language and not changing their names. So he's basically asking two questions. How come during the Tekufa of Ba'i Sheni, when the Jews were living in Eretz Yisrael in the Second Temple era, why is it that they allowed themselves, that they spoke the vernacular Aramaic rather than Lashon HaKodesh? Why? Why did they speak Aramaic? And the second question is, how come the months have Goyish names? Those are the two questions that he's talking about. Again, we discussed some of the, based on last week.
I don't know, was Aramaic a language of Babel that we adopted, or was it our language that we created?
We didn't create Aramaic. Aramaic is a corrupted language. It's a little bit like a slang of similar to Hebrew. It's a Semitic language. It's hard to really talk about its exact origin. There's a discussion about what its origin actually is, but it's not for now. Vanirb is the next paragraph. Behektim mashiyesh lohovin hodi isa biyuma shebebai sheni chosru chamisha dvarim. The tkufa of the Second Temple, the Gemara tells us in Yuma, five things were missing from the temple in that period. Harishon mehem hu ha'aron. We know that they lacked the Aron HaKodesh, the Holy Ark. Asher gonzu bimei Yoshio HaMelech. That was already hidden away from the days of Yoshio. Now, so you could answer that the reason why they didn't have it is because it was hidden and it was gone. They just didn't know where it was. But it's not quite true, he says. One would think that maybe it's because it got lost. They didn't know where it was. Achloi kein mashma b'mesechta shkolim. But he proves from a Mishnah in Shkolim, the Isa Hosam, Maisa Bekoin Echod, Shehoya Misasik, Vero Esaritzpo Shimshuna Mechaber Seho. A Kohen was once going and working in the Azorah, and he noticed one of the tiles of the Azorah's floor looked a little different than the other ones. And he told it to his friend, Lohispik Ligmor Adover, before he had a chance to tell him the details. Achiyotza Nishmosa, he died before he had a chance to disclose the details. V'yodu b'yichud, from there they knew for sure, shesham ha'oron gonus, that that's the spot where the Aron was and he wasn't meant to disclose it. In other words, the Mishnah from the Mishnah Harei Av Shiyodu Eifo Ha'Aron Nignas, it would imply that even though they may have known where the Aron was hidden, nevertheless they didn't seek to restore it to its original place. They never made the attempt of restoring it and placing it back to its proper spot in the Kodesh Kedoshim. So his third question now is, why is it that if they had the ability, perhaps, to restore things in Bai Sheni to the original grandeur of Bai Srishan, such as replacing and putting the Aron back in its proper place, why did they choose not to do so? So says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, a chiddush over here, that this was all intentional. Third paragraph. Nira, she'oile bovel shebonu es habayis hasheni, the returnees from Babylon, when they came back to Bai Sheni. Now this is something which we once made mention of in other occasions, but he elaborates on it here, and this is what Stan was referring to earlier. When you started saying something, you're referring to this idea which he now elaborates on. We mentioned this in the past. They knew during the return from Bavel that this was not the complete Geula. Kiloi zehobinyin asher yamoid loylomen, that the second temple is not the one that's going to be the final temple and the one that's going to remain forever in this state. Ve'ein chazorosim l'eretz Yisroel b'tkufazu ha'gula shlema. That means, says Rabbi Yaakov, that they understood, and the Ibn Ezra says like this as well. There's an Ibn Ezra that says along these lines, that the return of Bai Sheni cannot be viewed as a complete geula, as a geula shlema, and they themselves did not view it as a geula. Daitom hoysa, they understood, ki binyan abayis b'tkufa zois, lo yinoyad el lohochen esom b'tkufa zgolos harucha. This is already a little bit of a bigger chiddush. They understood that the point of Bai Sheni and their redemption was a temporary return in order to better prepare them for the great long goals that was to follow. That means, I guess, I don't know if the people themselves were privy to this, but the Nevi'im, the leaders, they understood that there's going to be a long goals to follow, such as we're faced with. And to prepare themselves for the goals, God let them return for a period that they could set into place the structure, the infrastructure of Yiddishkeit, that it should endure for all eternity till the final Geula, and therefore the Geula of Bai Sheni was merely there temporarily in order to give them a breather and a chance to, you know, collect their wits, so to speak, and to set into place and into motion those things that we need to be able to endure and survive Geulos. And they knew that. Al pishurus hadin, hayuhem tzrichim lishor bebovel oidzman rav, meaning that they felt that really they should have stayed in Babylon and they should have remained in Golis for a much longer period. Elo sheroasu hashgacha, but the divine providence saw shekvar la'acha shivim shonu shal Golis bovel, that after 70 years of being in Golis bovel, Kvar nitma v'nisarev roiva om magoyim, they become so assimilated. In other words, in a 70-year period, in such a short period of time, the Jews became so assimilated to the Babylonians that they were almost indistinguishable in many ways. We had this, of course, in several places. We know in Mitzrayim it happened, that in a short period of time, the Jews almost completely integrated into Egyptian society, and Hashem had to take them out at the last moment. And that's really the message of the matzah. The message of the matzah is, look how assimilated we were, that we had to leave at this instant, because if we would have stayed a little bit longer, we would have been lost forever. And matzah tells us we couldn't wait that extra few minutes, so to speak. Gosh, redemption had to be then.
Isn't there a prophecy from Yeremia regarding this?
Yes, that's true. What you're saying is true.
That it would end.
Yeah, that it would end, yeah. Again, maybe that was part of the anticipation. Good question, good question. But he's saying that a similar idea happened in Bayis Sheni. Now, it's amazing to us how rapidly...
Well, doesn't that kind of mean that the Second Temple was sort of a false...
Yeah, it kind of means that. It was like a holding pattern. It was a facade of a redemption, but not a real redemption. But it's kind of a little bit disheartening as to how rapidly Jews could sink into assimilation. But, you know, we know that the you know, from the time the Soviets took over communism till, you know, the Jews were able to leave, it was also about a 70-year period, that's it. And in those 70 years, almost all of Jewry and Judaism and Yiddishkeit was... was lost to the majority of the Russian Jews. Assimilation is very rapid.
But if you could...
Hashgachas saw the need for redemption because they couldn't last in that Golos any longer. Ubor kashemesh hoya ki mis'akvu b'nei Yisrael b'golos meos v'alfei shonim. In other words, what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky is saying is that it was already expected that Golos was going to last for thousands of years. But they weren't ready for that Golos yet. After 70 years, they had such a decline that the Hashgachas saw that if this were to be the real Golos, it wasn't going to happen. The Jews won't make it. They won't endure. We're on the second page now. She'oz bevadai lo yatzliach om lishor bezahusam yuchedes. The Jews would not be able to retain their identity. V'shuv lo yiem esmi ligol. And there won't be any Jews left to redeem. And therefore there was a level of special mercy. Chomal Hashem al Amo, Voitzion mi Bovel v'chziron. Hashem had a merciful expression of redemption to take them out from Bovel and to bring them back. Bo'ofen zmani, with an original understanding that this was going to be a temporary return. Le'eretz Yisrael. So that means the Geula of Bayis Sheni was expected that it was only going to be a temporary one. Ubono lemes beis habechira, Hashem had them build the beis hamikdash. Now again, Steve, just to make one important difference, it was only done with Nevi'im. Nevi'im had to be there to tell them where and when and how to build the temple. Without that, you can't just build a temple. Vakoil b'chdei sheyashuvu v'yischasku. The intention was that they should be able to develop and to create a infrastructure of Judaism that would be on firm foundations of emuna via mchusonin likras tkufas hagolus hamora, that they should be better prepared and shielded and insulated from the great golus that was to follow afterwards. Let's take a look at footnote number 17 on this. B'chidush al Pirkei Avos b'Yer Rabbeinu, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says on the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, she'chelik mi'asiba she'chzirim Hashem Yisborch l'Eretz Yisrael Oz, that the reason why Hashem brought them back to Eretz Yisrael at that time, hoysa b'shvil she'yuchlu la'asoif v'la'aruch es Torah she'bal peh, in order that they should be able to better codify and structure the Torah Shebal Peh. Now this is very important, because this really gives a whole importance to the concept of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. We talked about the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah many times, but the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, their influence and their importance cannot be underestimated. Can't be exaggerated. They had such a huge influence on being able to set into motion and into play the entire structure of finalizing Torah Shebiksav, setting up the pillars of the Torah Shebal Peh, and the transmission and the Mesorah, and setting the Jews on a course where they'll be able to retain their individualism, their individuality, and their nationhood and their identity. And therefore, Bayis Sheni, to a great extent, was about setting the stage for Torah Shebal Peh, which is really ultimately what keeps us and retains us in Golos. Which is why the Golos in Bavel, after 70 years, they had a huge decline in 70 years. Whereas we've been in Golos in persecution and expulsion and scattered throughout the four corners of the globe for 2,000 years, we still retain our identity, largely thanks to the Torah Shebaal Peh. Ki yodo ha-hashgocha, shebishvil la-hachzik maimit begolos, Hashgocha knew that to retain Jewish identity in the Golos, shuv i-efshir, shetiyah Torah Shebaal Peh, nachlos na-protis shalchach me-etorah. Torah Shebaal Peh always existed, even in Bayis Rishon. The difference is that in Bayis Rishon, Torah Shebaal Peh was the province of the individual sages that were expert in it. But it wasn't something that the masses had. Take a look at the art scroll phenomenon and the Daf Yomi phenomenon. What has it done? Now, a lot of people could criticize it for a lot of reasons. But the one thing that it has done is that it has taken Torah Shebaal Peh and disseminated it far and wide to the ignoramii, to the ignoramuses. And even people that could barely read Hebrew, let alone become sages, they're learning Torah Shebaal Peh. They're learning Erevin, Shabbos. Well, I mean, it's amazing. It's the dissemination of Torah Shebaal Peh to the masses. And what was in Bayis Rishon and throughout the period till Bayis Sheni was the fact that the Torah Shebaal Peh existed, but it was in the domain and the province of individual great sages. The masses didn't have it. One of the first things that it says in the Mishnah, in Pirkei Avos, the first Mishnah, Moshe kibel Torah Misinai Misar LeYeshua, Yeshua Zekeinim, Zekeinim Unvim, Unvim Masru LaAnshei Knesset HaGdolah, they gave it to Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, Heim Amru Shlosh HaDvarim, and the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah is renowned for three things. One is to make a siyog Torah, to make, to preserve the Torah with fences, and that's a great deal of what Anshei Knesset HaGdolah did. And again, that's to preserve the Jewish people from assimilation with the Goyim. The second thing was Hamidu Talmidim Harbe, to develop many disciples, to disseminate the Torah to the masses. That was one of the things that they introduced. The Gemara tells us that Hillel and Shammai, what was their various approaches? Shammai was very careful about who they accepted in their yeshivas. And therefore, Shammai's school had the greatest of the sages and the most erudite and the sharpest. But Hillel had many more. They weren't as sharp, they weren't as erudite, but they had many, many more. Because Hillel's approach was disseminate Torah as much as possible to the masses. This was what the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah did, and the Hashgacha wanted that this was the way the Torah should be disseminated. Because Torah Shebaal Peh is needed by the masses in order to withstand the tests of Golos. Eli mochrechas lios nachalosim shall call Yisrael. It's to be the inheritance and the legacy of all of Israel, rather than just the Chachmei HaTorah alone. That's what Golos needed. Lochein gam omdu oigozru al pitom b'shamnom. Therefore we find some of the decrees of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, such as Pasakum, Shemenakum, Yain, Stamyenam, all these things, Hakol Kedei Lisrachik Min HaGoyim, that was the first thing, Asu Siyog LeTorah, make fences, keep boundaries between Jews and Goyim, and therefore they made those boundaries, such as the Gezeirs that you learn in the Masechtas Avodah Zarah, about their wine, about their bread, and all these things, because they anticipated that there was going to be a long and lengthy Golos and that the Jews shouldn't assimilate. So one of the things that they did was to make sure that there were these proper boundaries and guide, and things to separate us. Okay, so now he gets to your point. This is in the footnote. So this is all Mipi HaShmu of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. He says, with this, we could perhaps understand the founding of the modern state of Israel. Now we get a little bit controversy over here for those that like this kind of stuff. This is the way we should view the founding of the modern state of Israel. What does that mean? Shela'achar ha'churban ha'godol. That after the great, you know, depression and everything else and the destruction of the Holocaust, va'yush, and the fact that people were not only just depressed, but they gave up hope. There was a tremendous hopelessness that came about Judaism and Jewry and the endurance of the Jewish people. Shenechas bekerv she'eris ha'pleita, the remnants, the survivors of the Holocaust, were very, very disillusioned. They were depressed, dejected, and they had given up hope for a future of the Jewish people. Hashem gives us a tremendous light and a miraculous redemption. Because of their feelings of hopelessness and loss, Shalyadus Rusia, Siviv HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Es HaKomis HaMedina, Hashem brought about the HaKomis HaMedina, the establishment of the State of Israel, Kidei L'chazek Es Zahus HaYehudis, in order to give us a sense of identifying and identity, Ulekayim Es HaKesher, Shebein Yadus HaGoyla, Uklal Yisrael. Now, here he's referring to something else, I'm not sure how many of you remember, but a great deal of what maintained the identity of the 2 to 3 million Jews of Russia with their Yiddishkeit was that they identified with the State of Israel. And that's why after the 67 war, there was this resurgence in Russia of Jewish identification. And there are many that actually say that the fall of the Soviet Union resulted from what happened then. Sharansky and others, they set into motion then some of these, the refuseniks and the whole thing, that whole tkufa began a process by which Western ideas became important in the Soviet Union, and it spread and it spread till ultimately the Soviet Union itself collapsed. But even with that or without that, the fact that the Jews were able to retain a sense of identity with Judaism in Russia, the fact that Shlomo Kalbach was able to go to Moscow or these places and they would have a Shabbos service, a Friday night service, or a Simchas Torah service of 35,000 Jews. And that was at the height of communism. 35,000 Jews would show up out of nowhere. Jews that had like almost no ties to Judaism. A lot of it was because they saw the State of Israel as a resurgence of hope. So the State of Israel gave them a sense of identity and hope, and to the Jewish people as a whole. So after the destruction and the disillusionment in the wake of the Holocaust, came the Medina as a hope and a resurgence of the Jewish people to give us, Klal Yisrael can still last. The point is, this is a two-edged sword. In other words, don't view the State of Israel, the modern State of Israel, as the Gula, or maybe not even as the racist Tzmichas Gula Seinu, but as just another way of Hashem's Hashgacha giving us a chance to give us hope and be able to come back and re-identify, to give us strength. It's a chizuk, it's a booster shot. So he says that's what Ba'i Sheni was. Ba'i Sheni in that sense was like that. And therefore one could similarly argue that the modern State of Israel has some of those features as well. Again, this is a large discussion which we could go into all kinds of, you know, avenues from this and, you know, byways and sideways on this. But no, there's a lot that could be said about this. But this is the idea. The concept behind this is that the Hakomis HaMedina is Hashem's way of giving us a shtutz, giving us chizuk, giving us a sense of renewal and rebirth and rehope, showing us that Netzach Yisrael, it's a renaissance of Jewry, and it fits in very well to HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem. Because what is HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem? Literally. The renewal of the moon. The fact that the moon waxes and wanes, and the moon is considered to be the symbol of the Jewish people. The Goyim follow the sun, Jews follow the moon. And even though the moon loses and disappears, it's born again. The moon is constantly reborn. So too the Jewish people, no matter how many times they face destruction and seemingly oblivion, they have a resurgence and a renaissance and a rebirth and a renewal. And if you take the word chodesh literally, it means chidush, renewal, rebirth. Jews are eternally capable of rebirthing themselves, like the mythical phoenix. It rises from its ashes. The Jewish people rises from the ashes of the Holocaust. And that's really what the state of Israel is. It was a phoenix that rose from the ashes of the Holocaust. HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem. HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem. The ability to renew ourselves and to rebirth ourselves, to be reborn. That's HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem. So really, this gives a new poignancy to this first mitzvah that was given to the Jewish people. Because what was being told to the Jewish people with the first mitzvah was, you people may go through many, many cycles. Many cycles of destruction. And just like in Egypt, you're down on the bottom, you're going to be born now as the Jewish people. But not only are you being born as the Jewish people, but you will be reborn again and again. So really the message behind HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem is a very deep and a very powerful message. It starts off before the laws of Korban Pesach. This is the birth of the Jewish people. In fact, that's the way we explain what the Ramban says. The Ramban says that the reason why we have the mitzvah HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem, Rosh Chodoshim, is a zeichel Yitzias Mitzrayim. Why? Why is it important to remember Yitzias Mitzrayim? So we said last week several aspects to it, like four different pshatim we said. You know, it tells us about Hashgach, it tells us about Nisim Mitzrayim, all the foundations of Judaism. But one of the most important, and it teaches us Hakor Satov, but one of the things that we pointed out is that this is when we became the Jewish people. So it's a mitzvah to remember the birth of the Jewish people. Well, comes HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem and says, not only are the Jewish people born, but they're going to be reborn again and again and again. HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem, you have the power of rebirth. Not only are you born now, but you have the power of rebirth and forever starting over again. Like the moon that waxes and wanes, that's the Jewish people. And therefore that's by Sheni, according to Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. And according to Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, that's the way to understand the modern state of Israel as a phoenix that rises from the ashes of the Holocaust.
Gosh, does Kamenetsky ever deal with the Northern Kingdom?
Okay, back to the text on top. So the idea was that Bayi Sheni was necessary as a way of preparing the Jews for the future Golos. Now here he says, gets to the point of this whole thing with the names and stuff. Says the day lahadgish ulahamchish la'am, in order to emphasize, to underline to the people, shadain heim loinigalu, that Bayi Sheni is not the real redemption. In order that they should realize that this is only a kind of a temporary holding pattern, but not the real redemption. V'chi be'etzem adayin heim begolus. In order that they should realize, you know what? We're still in Golus. We're still in Golus. Lo helu es'arns, they made these significant differences, such as not bringing back the Aron HaKodesh, which is the Makor HaKdusha of the Bayis Rishon, which was the source of all holiness. Mimokim shenignes v'shir b'mokom, they allowed the Aron to remain in this place in order that we should be aware, ki adayin ein hagulo shlema, in order to make note and inform the people that the gula has not yet been completed. Again, if you look on footnote number 18 on the bottom, let's take a look at it. The chidush of al-sefer Shmuel Bir Rabbeinu Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky writes in the Novi and Shmuel, l'fiza madu achar chur ben shiloi shehukam ha-mishkan b'noi v'givoin lohuchzer oran l'mekaimai. Elohoi munach bebeis avinodov esrim shana, v'hayin mishm shenoi v'givoin lohoi sagul l'shleima, elo arroyes l'chein ad shich l'dovid livnois es beis ha-migdash lo hizis es oran. He says that's the way we understand why in Nov and Givon they didn't have the Aron after the destruction of Shiloh. Because they wanted to be aware, Nov and Givon, until we're ready for the Beis HaMikdash, we're not going to have an Aron. So we see that the idea of the Aron not coming back was a way of underlining the fact that the Gaul is not yet here, the Beis HaMikdash is not a real one yet. Okay, next paragraph. Machmas HaKorosim Zu. Now that we understand this, Shadayin lo higia hagula shlema. Once they realized and recognized that the gula shlema has not yet happened, hinhigu oile bovel kama v'kama inyonim shiyu oisim k'moy shoyu noyagim b'tkufas hagolus. This is a little bit of a chiddush now. What he's saying is that as a result of this, they wanted to retain some of the characteristics of the golus as a way of reminding themselves that they're still in golus. The same way that we remind ourselves of Geula with aspects of Geula, like we have royal tables on Pesach, it's ironic how a lot of people, they want to celebrate Pesach Rome, they feel real good about it, but to make it easier, they use plastic and paper dishes and stuff. You're supposed to take out your silver and china and your finery because you're supposed to act royal. That means Jews throughout the exile retained a semblance of royalty when it came Pesach, to remind themselves of the Geula. Well, this is the mirror image, the flip side. That when they had Geula in Bayis Sheni, they said, no, this isn't the real thing yet. We have to retain a remembrance that we're still in Golus. So they retained elements of Golus. They retained certain elements of Golus. Laharos shebe'emes tkufas Golus bava adayinim shechas. I mean, he's saying a pretty big chiddush over here. He's saying, no, we're still in Golus Bavel. And Bavel segued into Persia, and Persia into Greece, until finally we went to our Golus. And therefore, we still are in Golus. V'abinyin hanivne enoy elo aroy v'osid lichorev. And that they should be aware that Bayis Sheni is a temporary one destined to be destroyed. In order to retain this memory, therefore they intentionally kept and retained the Goyish Babylonian Persian names of the months in order to remind ourselves of this. In order, as the Ramban says, Muslim. This is a way of retaining the memory that this was not a complete redemption. We're on top of the second column. And based on this, we can understand why they spoke Aramaic. Gam l'shoinen nishar k'loshen ha-golos. They retained their Goyish language as a semblance and memory or a constant reminder that they're still in Golos. Loshen ha-rami. V'lo chozer l'daber b'loshen ha-kodesh. And therefore they didn't speak in loshen ha-kodesh. Ma shehoyo mare kilu heim nigolu. Ba'ifin Saifi. Because had they have spoken Lashon HaKodesh, they said, oh, we're finally redeemed. No. V'nira shegamze hatam adua nichtav atalmud ha-yushalmi ba-ramis v'bishleima habavi shnichtav b'vavol nichtav b'sfas ha-medina avol yushalmi shnichtav b'eretz Yisrael madua nichtav ba-ramis elo devreinu nasa zemi atam anal. He's saying that we understand why Talmud Bavli was written in Babylonian, because it was written in Babylon. But why would Talmud Yerushalmi be written in Aramaic when it was written in Eretz Yisrael? He says maybe this is the same reason. Again, I'm not convinced of that one. And what he said about the Ramban, I'm also not convinced of. But let's first just take a look at footnote 19.
So Aramaic, the regular language in Babylon.
Okay, so I think you're right. I think the real reason why they wrote Aramaic in Yerushalmi in Babylonian is because that was the way they were talking. He's saying that maybe it has to do with this because otherwise they would have used Lashon HaKodesh. What you're saying makes the most sense. That since that was the, what's it called? The Franca lingua.
Lingua Franca.
Since that was the lingua franca of the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael at the time, that's the way they wrote it. Proof of that, by the way, is that Yerushalmi Aramaic is different than Bavli Aramaic. I mean, people that are able to learn Talmud Bavli have a much more difficult time with Talmud Yerushalmi. Yeah, because they're two different dialects of Aramaic. So clearly it was because it was the lingua franca rather than what he's saying now, but okay, whatever.
So in the days of the First Temple, the Jews spoke Hebrew?
Yeah, that's for sure. That's certainly the case.
So within 70 years, they completely changed over to...
Something like that, yeah. Let's take a look at footnote 19, because I want to make a comment on what he says about the Ramban. Oy Hosef Rabbeinu, in footnote 19, Shazat Tam, Mashemotzinu, Sheshmorseim, Shechelik Matanoim, Rav Amoroim, Hem Shemus Aramim, Veloy Shemus Yudin, in terms of names. Why the Tanoim and the Amoroim seem to have Babylonian or Aramaic names? Vav, Bishem Mitzrayim, Nishtapch, Shoshinu, Shemam, although we know that in Mitzrayim they were praised for not for retaining Jewish names, here they seem to have discarded. Hanim Tamanao. Aval Hoysif Shebiyomenu Ein Zenegea. He says, but don't let that be a precedent for us nowadays. Va'adarabba. Tzorch Davka Likur B'Shemus Yehudim K'dei Shelo Yuvo L'Sarv B'Goyim. Nowadays we have the importance in the other direction. See, he's saying that the reason why they retained Aramaic names in those days was as a way of constantly reminding themselves, this isn't the real deal yet. This isn't the real McCoy, the real Gula. We're still in Gauls, and that was their way of retaining it. He says, nowadays we have more of a concern the other direction. That's not the problem that we have nowadays. So he says, even though they may have retained Aramaic names to remind themselves that they're in Gauls and that they're not fully redeemed, for us, it's more important in the other direction to have Jewish names. I'm going to make a comment on this in a second as well. In order that we shouldn't assimilate. Avahem loy choshul is that they didn't have the problem of assimilation. V'kashash v'yishol yiplu. You know, when Tel's Yeshiva began building Tel stone in Israel, so they had a big problem then. In fact, when you go on the highway between Yerushalayim and Tel Aviv, there's a turn off over there for Tel stone, and it says it's Abu Ghush Tel stone, but also it's called Kiryas Yearim. That was its biblical name. And I remember at the time, Shimon Peres was the minister of something or other, and they didn't want to allow the name Tel Stone, because it's a Galut name. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want a Galut name. So they wanted names like Kiryas Yearim, Hebraicized names. I don't know, who knows, what was Ben-Gurion's original name? Whatever, yeah, it became Ben-Gurion. Golda Meir was Meirovich or Meirsky or something, and you know, they Hebraicized the names because we're in Geula now. In other words, they want to stamp out the idea of Golos. The truth is, what he's saying over here is exactly the reason why people will call Ponovich, Mir, Slabotka, Tels. What are these? These are basically, you know, Lithuanian names. They're Lithuanian, Ukrainian, Russian names. You have Bells, you have all the names. Bote Ungarn, Bote Varsha. I mean, all of Israel is full of names from the Golos. And the Zionists are opposed to that. Precisely for this reason. Because they want to stamp out any feeling of Golos and say, no, we're in Gula now. You don't want any of these old European names. We want to forget about it. Forget about that past. We're a new age, new people. So the truth is, then it's important to follow what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says. Because you should know that in spite of whatever you hold about the state of Israel, this isn't the real deal. It's not the final gula. Whatever your opinion on it is, whether you're on the left, to the right, whether you're, you know, whatever it is, even if you say, Reishis Tzmichas Gula Seinu, it's only Reishis Tzmichas Gula Seinu. It's maybe at best the beginning of the flowering of redemption, but it's not the redemption. The Zionists, the secular Zionists, don't go for any of that. This is it. This is it. It doesn't get any better than this. It's like telling people, hey, fellas, it doesn't get any better than this. And in order that we shouldn't think that, it is important to remember that we're in Gauls, in Israel. We don't have a temple. We don't have any of these things. And it's important to remember, and this is the flip side of what we were talking about before, that if the Hakomis HaMedina was placed for us as a way of giving us a booster shot, a shot in the arms that God is still going to redeem us and there's hope, then it's also important to remember the flip side, that this is a booster shot. This isn't the final real deal. It's not the final redemption. And therefore, it is important to retain Bells and Tells and Square and whatever it is in Ponovich and Mir. Retain those names. Because there's still some goals going on yet. We're not redeemed yet. Whatever your view on Zionism is or religious Zionism, but clearly the secular Zionists want you to believe that this is it, and it's not it. And that we have to remember that it's not it. So therefore, what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says about Ba'i Sheni and these retention of these things is very important for us today. Although he's pointing out that here in America, retaining Goyish names is not necessary. We have to keep our Jewish names because our danger is the exact opposite. So when you're in Golis, retain memories of Gula. When you're in a Gula that's only a facade of a Gula or a half-hearted Gula, then you got to retain memories of Golis. That's really what we have from this. It's a very interesting approach. But it turns out that when we're in Gula, but not quite, retain memories of Golis. When we're in Golis, retain memories of Gula. Always the opposite side, the flip side. Very important point. And I think that's very valid what he's saying. What I find a little bit, what I would take issue is his understanding of the Ramban. His understanding of the Ramban seems to be that the reason why they took the Goyish names of the months is for this reason that he's describing. I don't see that in the Ramban at all. I see the Ramban does not, I don't see any sign in the Ramban that he viewed the Geula of the Second Temple period as being only a halfway Geula and not a complete Geula, and in order to retain that memory, they kept the names. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky is learning the Ramban, this idea. Namely, they came back in the time of the Second Temple. They saw that the Second Temple wasn't the real deal. Therefore, to retain, they retained the names of the months as a memory of their goals that they don't have a full Geula. I don't see any of that in the Ramban. From the Ramban, it would seem that it's a Geula. It could be a Geula, a complete Geula. And they wanted to retain that memory, that this is a Geula. In fact, Ramban is basing himself on the Pasuk of Yirmiyahu. Lo ye'oymer ye'oyd chai Hashem ha'shehel es Yisrael ne'eretz Mitzrayim. No longer will we talk about the Exodus of Egypt, but rather the Exodus of Bavel. This was a way of retaining the Geula of Golas Bavel. And to the Ramban, it could be a complete Geula, and they still did it anyway. In fact, the Sefer Yirkam uses this as his launching pad to say that mitzvahs aren't immutable. So I don't see anything of what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says in the Ramban, although he's trying to read it into the Ramban. I don't see that. I think from the Ramban, it sounds like it's a Geula, and poof, farker. It's a Geula, and they wanted to emphasize that it's a Geula, so they kept the names as a way of emphasizing that.
Right, that's the opposite.
Right, it's the opposite. Okay, let's just try to hurry up and finish up the rest. We're now in the second column, second paragraph. V'ayin le'el pashas v'ayichi, she'biyat l'fi zemadu b'emes lo'kom melech mimalchus beis David b'tkufazu. Now here's another interesting point that he brings out. Again, this is a little bit of an insight, an overview of many things that we've touched on in the past. Remember, we talked about the Chanukah thing, and about the fact that the Chashmonaim were kings, although they're not supposed to be kings from Kohanim. And the Ramban actually says that the reason why the Chashmonai dynasty was wiped out was because they violated the tzivui of Yaakov to say that lo yosu shevet miYehuda, that you're not allowed to have kings outside of Yehuda. So Ramban says that's why all the Chashmonaim, the whole Chashmonai dynasty was wiped out because of that violation. So we talked about that in the past. Was it or wasn't it a violation? And what the Ramban held and Chassam Sofer and all that, we talked about in the past. But now he just throws this into the mix as well. Why was it? He asks in reverse. How come in Ba'i Sheni they didn't have a king from the house of David? You know, we talk about the Chashmonaim, but right off the bat, what happened? Why was there no king throughout the Second Temple period from the house of David? Why did they bother with that? Ki lahamid melech mizera hamlucha hoysa ba'oysa shoa kineged ruach hamokim. He says, for this reason, because to establish a king, a proper king, from the house of David, would have violated everything which we just said. Ki hamlochas melech mishpachas David hamelech hoysa mispareshes kilu higia keitz hayomim vagula asida. Having a king from the Davidic dynasty means we have the Geula. That's the Geula, that's Mashiach. And Mashiach wasn't there yet. And therefore, because to make note of the fact that this is not the full Geula, and that Mashiach hasn't yet arrived, lochein lo hi'iru chach meisrael lebeis chashmonoim, and therefore there was no taina against the chashmonoim, al shimlichu atzmav shehoyo zeh, b'isr k'mo shekosa Ramban sham, even though the according to the Ramban, the Chashmonaim were in violation, they didn't stop it. Why didn't they stop it? I mean, again, we've learned other pshatim that what they did wasn't wrong. We explained once that the Chashmonaim themselves never really appointed themselves as kings until the days of Yanai, and Yanai actually was in violation. But until Yanai, the original Chashmonaim never established themselves as king. They only made themselves Nasi, which is a different position. And they established a sign on the walls by the Beis HaMikdash saying that this is all temporary till Mashiach finally comes. What he's saying though is that they never really intended to have a Davidic king, because that would have given the impression of Geula, and it was not yet Geula, and therefore there wasn't such a great objection to the Chashmonaim either, because this is not Geula, we're still in Golos. So they didn't really object to it so strongly. Although apparently from Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, it seems that they were wrong, but they merely just didn't object to it. What we said other times is they not necessarily were even wrong. But in any case, he's still making a good point, that they didn't have a Davidic king throughout that whole period. He's suggesting the reason why they didn't have a king throughout that whole Second Temple period was for the reason that he just said, that it shouldn't look like the final Geula. We know that the way the order of the Nevi'im is in Tanakh is that Yecheskel comes first, and then we have the Nevuas of Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi. Now, the Nevuah of Haggai was one of the prophets of the beginning of the Second Temple era, is about building the Second Temple. Yet the Nevuah of Yecheskel is about building the final temple, by Shlishi. So why is the order reversed where Yechesel comes before Haggai? So he says like this. Madu anistava Yechesel al Abai Shishi Kaidim shenistava Haggai al Abai Sheni. Why is it that Yechesel comes first with a commandment of Bai Shlishi before Haggai, who comes to tell us about Bai Sheni? Why would Bai Shlishi's Nevuah come before Bai Sheni? Le'ezet tzarech gdim wesam ucher. It was intended to first tell us about Bayis Shlishi with Yecheskel before it tells us about Bayis Sheni with Haggai. Kizehu Abayis Shesimin Es Gulas Yisrael Hashlema. Because Bayis Shlishi, the Nevuah of Yecheskel, is the Gula Shlema, the final Bayis, the final Beis HaMikdash. This is what they were anticipating. Remember, Yecheskel HaNavi prophesied at the end of the first temple era. Haggai was 70 years later in the beginning of the second temple era. So Yecheskel, who preceded Haggai by 70 years, is prophesying about the final temple, and only 70 years later do they have Haggai prophesying about the second temple. The Teretz is because from the time of the destruction of the first temple, the Jews were yearning for the final redemption. And that's where Yecheskel comes in. He comes and tells them, this is what the final redemption is going to look like. That's the Gula Shlema. And that's what they were yearning for from the time of the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, the Gula Asida. Mash'enken Chagai Nistava by Sheni Shoya Roy, Ubobes Mangolus Chalokis. Chagai was there to interrupt the Golus and to say, yeah, there's a Golus, and the future Gula is like Yecheskel said, but now God is giving us a temporary reprieve with Bayis Sheni. It divides Golus into two parts. L'chein nuvos b'achrayna, that's why it comes in that order. Let's just take a quick look at the footnote on 20. B'zdamnus acheres b'irabeinu k'tzas b'ayfen acher v'haynu shebedavke nisna b'yecheskel al Bayis Shlishi koydim hanuvos shel Bayis Sheni. He said a little bit of slightly different spin on this. The idea of Yecheskel's prophecy of the third Bayis is that later on they should be aware that when they're building Bayis Sheni, it means it's only going to be a temporary one and it's destined to be destroyed. Interesting point he's making here. Shmona Esrei that we have was already composed in the time of Bayis Sheni. So how come it says in the Shmona Esrei that was composed in Bayis Sheni, you're going to return to Jerusalem? They already returned. That means this is the same idea. That even though they were in the Second Temple era, and they knew they already had Yerushalayim, and they already had a Beis HaMikdash, and this was composed in the Second Temple era, nevertheless, they inserted in the prayer, that we're yearning for a redemption, which we still don't have yet. We want a full redemption of Bayis Shlishi. So even in the Second Temple period, they knew this. Very, very nice explanation. Last paragraph. Okay. Ulfi dvoreinu elu, yeshan ulvar apostik lahan pashas b'shalach, ad yavor amcho Hashem, ad yavor amzu kanisa. Now, this is referring to Gemara and Brachas. The Gemara and Brachas says on the pasuk in the Oz Yosher, where it's a double phrase, ad yavor amcho Hashem, ad yavor amzu kanisa, until your nation, O Lord, will cross over, until your nation, O Lord, will that you've established crosses over. So one pshat is it's referring to the Jordan, the Yamsuf, Nachal. There's a number of different things as to what it's referring to. But one pshat is that it's referring to is that there's going to be a future redemption from Bavel. To which the Gemara says in Brachas Dav Dalad, Ad Yavram Chashem Zubi Arishayna. That's the first time they came to Israel with Yeshua. Ad Yavram Zukanisa Zubi Ashnia. Referring to the time that they came up with Ezra in the Second Temple period. To which the Gemara says, what does this tell us? That really that redemption should have been the equal in greatness and magnificence as the first redemption. That's the Gemara in Brachas. That the second Bia, the second incoming, the second ingathering of exiles under Ezra should have been as grand and as great as the first ingathering of exiles under Moshe and Yeshua from Egypt. But it wasn't. It lost. Which Rashi explains, what does it mean it wasn't? It means because when they came under Yeshua, they were independent. When they came back under Ezra, they were still under Persian rule and Persian domination for many centuries. So they didn't really have a full redemption. So what that tells us is that really, originally God wanted that the second redemption under Ezra should have been as grand and as great and as powerful as the one from Mitzrayim, and they should have had a Beis HaMikdash fully built and a full-fledged Geula, complete Geula, with complete independence. But it wasn't. Why wasn't it? So the Gemara says, Shegorim HaChet. Sin reduced that redemption. This goes into the whole issue of whether prophecies can be revoked or not. We once talked about that topic, about whether prophecies can ever be revoked. Good prophecies. Bad prophecies can always be revoked. Can good prophecies be revoked? We talked about that once. But this is one of the source materials for that discussion and for that topic. In any case, he now explains like this. V'hainu, she'be'emes ha'yitzrichim rak l'shnei bios. What this tells us is there should have only been two gulas. One from Mitzrayim and one from Bavel. V'hainu, binyan bayis rishon b'mei Shlomo, the first Beis HaMikdash of Shlomo Melech, u'binyan bayis shlishi b'mei Mashiach. And the final bias of the Yecheskel, which we call bias Shlishi, the third bias, but really should have been the second bias, and that would have been the bias of Yecheskel's prophecy. But what happened was Avol Gor Machet. But sin brought about Shenis Arvavu v'nis Boilu ben Agoyim, that we assimilated too much amongst the Goyim, v'hutzruch HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'golam b'oifin aroy, which required God to interrupt the Golas with a middle level redemption of Bayis Sheni, Livnois Bayis Sheni, Kedei Shaloi Ishtaku B'umas, in order that we shouldn't be totally assimilated. What he's saying is like this. The fact that the Gemara says there should have been two Bios, two Geulos, and it should have been equally grand. They should have been equally grand. But sin reduced the ingathering, the second ingathering. So most of us learn pshat in that, that it's a prophecy regarding the ingathering of exiles in the time of Ezra. And what the Gemara is saying on that is that the ingathering of exiles, the gula of Ezra, should have been as great as the gula of Moshe and Yeshua. But because of sin, we didn't quite make it there. And as Rashi says, under Moshe and Ezra, we were redeemed and we had independence. Under Moshe and Yeshua, we were redeemed and we had independence. Under Ezra, the redemption was a half-hearted one. The 10 tribes didn't come back, for example. Other things were lost. We weren't totally independent. Why wasn't it as great? Sin reduced the ingathering. Sin reduced the gula. Which then leads to the issue of if God prophesies that there's going to be a gula, can that prophecy be even partially revoked that it's not as great as the original one? So we had that discussion once. That, yeah, it's still a fulfillment of the prophecy. It's just not as great as it could have been. That's the way we understand that Gemara. He's putting a completely different spin on the Gemara. He's saying, no, what the Gemara is saying is there should have been two Geulas equally grand. One is the Geula of Mitzrayim under Moshe and Yeshua, and one is the Second Temple, meaning not the Second Temple that we had, but the Second Temple that was prophesied by Yechezkel, which would occur when Mashiach comes. That means we'll have two equally great Geulas. The final Geula and the Geula of Mitzrayim. In fact, comes Pesach. That's what we do by the Seder. What do we by the Seder? We break the matzah. And we break the matzah and we say, the small part we eat at the Seder from Motzi Matzah, Yachatz. And then the rest is the Afikomen, that's Tzofun. What do those two things represent? They represent the total package of Geula. The whole matzah represents the total package of Geula. That package of Geula is divided into two parts, Mitzrayim and Mashiach. Mitzrayim and Mashiach. That's the only two. There's Mitzrayim and Mashiach. That's the two Geulas. So the Pasuk says, Ad Yavram Hashem, Ad Yavram Zukanisa, that there is two Geulas, and they should be equally grand. What happened was, Garm HaChet, sin, caused an interruption and a disruption, because since we got so assimilated, that Hashem couldn't wait to have the second final Geula under Mashiach in the time that we would have still been Jewish. So Hashem had to insert. He had to insert a temporary type of Geula, which we call Bayis Sheni. So it's really the first and third temple that are the main temples and that are the main Geulas. There's the Geula of Mitzrayim and the Binyan of the Beis HaMikdash of Shlomo. And then there is the ingathering and the Geula of Mashiach and the Binyan Beis HaMikdash b'meher v'yameinu. That's the two Beis HaMikdashes. But Goram HaChet, sin brought about that we couldn't have that in that sequence because there's this long, lengthy galus, both quantitatively as well as qualitatively, that Jews are no longer on the Madrega and we would have lasted through galus. So Hashem needed, for our sake, to insert a new Geula called Bayis Sheni, where we could gather ourselves in and gather our wits about us and give ourselves chizuk and prepare ourselves for the lengthy galus with all the things that we described earlier, the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, the Torah Shebal Peh, the Mishnah, the prayers, everything, all the things that the Anshei Knesset HaGdola instituted and the Torah Shebal Peh. So we had a period of partial redemption for several hundred years to give us the strength to be able to go on to the next phase of galus. So rather than have two geulas, the second geulas was split into two phases. Phase one was in Babylon. Phase two is the lengthy exile that we're at now. It was interrupted with a mini geula of Bayis Sheni. Now, could Bayis Sheni be called geula or not? That's a discussion that Rishonim have. Devin Ezra doesn't even call it geula. Others call it geula. It's a question if Bayis Sheni is actually even called geula or not. According to him, it's not really geula. But regardless, the point is that Bayis Sheni was a temporary redemption for the sake of preparing ourselves for the final goals. So Shegor HaChet, when the Gemara in Brachos says that sin caused that the second ingathering wasn't the way it should be, doesn't mean that it should have been grand and became less grand. It means the whole second coming by Ezra was there as an insert between the two gulas that we should have had. Hashem needed this one for us. In any case, this is a very new perspective on the tkufa of Ba'is Sheni. The whole Ba'is Sheni is now put into a completely different light. Besides the interesting features that we have from Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky in terms of the historical view of how to view Ba'is Sheni, there are a number of lessons over here, which we talked about before. First of all, it casts a whole different light on what Hakomis HaMedina, the modern state of Israel, how to view the modern state of Israel in light of what he says regarding Ba'is Sheni. There's a little bit of that with the Hakomis HaMedina, with the modern founding of the state of Israel. So that's one thing. The other thing is the lessons that are learned from this. And that is that we have to always retain memories for different reasons. We have to retain memories of Geula when our hope is shattered and down. We have to retain memories of Golos to know that this isn't the real deal, that this is really an artificial or a temporary one. We have to remind ourselves of elements of Golos so that we don't think that we fully arrived there yet. We haven't fully arrived. But as a result, we are prepared with Golos for finally the Ba'is Shlishi. And again, the whole matzah should be whole, where we have both halves of the matzah and the Ba'is Shlishi, Bimhera V'Yomeinu, that it should be built speedily in our days.